We're all living in a time of high stress and anxiety. And while there are many ways people have found solace and maintained sanity during this time, going for brief walks, hikes, and run outside, with the proper social distancing, of course, has been a great outlet. So if that's how you're choosing to get away from things for a bit, then Allbirds has something that might help. Introducing the Tree Dasher from Allbirds, the world's first performance running shoe made from premium natural materials that are engineered to perform. FSC-certified eucalyptus fiber uppers and ZQ-certified merino wool deliver superior comfort and flexibility, and their proprietary sugarcane-derived sweet foam soles have been reworked into a dual-density midsole optimized for cushioning, energy return, and stability. Allbirds also printed the Dasher's carbon footprint right on the shoe, so you know its impact on the planet. They've made the environment a stakeholder in their business, because when the planet wins, we all win. With the new Allbirds Tree Dasher, feel confident knowing that you can run hard and tread light on the planet. Find your pair at Allbirds.com today.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
In fairness to NASCAR, it is Alabama. There are old nooses all over the place that you could just find anywhere, and some of them might just end up in a garage by accident. It's not the racism that you intended in that moment. It's inherited previous racism. I am sorry for all of you taking a victory lap today, a weird victory lap, a super odd victory lap about the Confederate flag has been taken away and the noose has been taken away, but there are many, many other symbols of Southern heritage that you could still have without the Confederate flag and the noose. Mike Ryan is demanding an apology from me. He is wearing a Darryl Waltrip shirt, Western Union 17.
The 17 car. I was glad you pointed that out.
Western Auto, excuse me, not Western Union.
That's a fine.
And Darryl Waltrip.
I can't wait to find out on Twitter why this might be problematic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mike Ryan, if you're not familiar with this show's putting its money where its mouth is, Mike Ryan, because he believed...
because I believe they're giving it an honest try.
Because you believed that NASCAR was trying to do the right things before all of this happened with yesterday's news that the... Yesterday's news that the FBI says it's not a hate crime, that it was a pull rope, a garage pull rope fashioned into a noose, but it had been there since 2019. And, you know, it being Alabama, just people kept walking past it. Mm-hmm. Now, Bubba Wallace says it's straight up a noose, that NASCAR says it's a noose, that the FBI says it's a noose. I really don't want to get into that discussion. I do enjoy a couple of things about this.
Well, the FBI said it's been there prior to knowing Bubba Wallace would occupy that garage, and it's a pull down that there's convincing photographic evidence that it's been there since 2019, well before knowing that Bubba would be assigned that garage.
And Bubba did not see it. Someone from NASCAR brought it to his attention.
Right. So. This is one of the more unfortunate things about this entire thing, because now, if you look at his mentions, it's an absolute tire fire. Not that it hasn't been for the last few days, but now people are comparing him to Jussie Smollett, and he's being memed. He wasn't the person that saw this. He wasn't the person that escalated this.
Okay, let's backtrack for just a second on a couple of fronts, because there is some funny here.
Okay. We backtracking to your apology, or?
We're not backtracking to my apology.
We better.
No. There will be no
Mike's
apology.
Mike's demanding it. He's got a Waltrip shirt on.
May not be the first lap. May not be the second lap.
No.
The third lap before the pit stop?
No. You're not getting an apology. What you might have to be happy with, and the only thing I feel like I'm willing to possibly give here, because I'm not going to give an apology, and I do think there's a good amount of funny here, but I do want to make an admission instead of an apology. And the admission is this. All of us saw a literal loophole in Bubba Wallace's garage that we could use to talk about the racism and the history of NASCAR. We found a literal loophole hanging. We didn't know whether it was a noose or a garage pole, but it was a literal loophole that allowed us all to shame NASCAR for its past. And so what I want to go back and look at is Mike Ryan actually, because NASCAR is trying to distance, Because NASCAR is actively alienating some of its racist customers who have claimed that sport as their own, NASCAR has been actively moving away from those customers. Mike Ryan decided to support NASCAR.
You'll get some new customers.
By buying hundreds of dollars worth of NASCAR gear.
So many Bubba Wallace shirts and Blue Deuce shirts and hats.
So he's trying to support this. And what I want to go back and just sort of rewind on this, okay? Because NASCAR is trying to do the right thing. And in this instance, they self-reported. Like, for all of you coming at Bubba Wallace for the hoax, NASCAR trying to do the right thing volunteered that they found this. This wasn't a news media creation. This wasn't a news organization finding a news. NASCAR volunteered to us, here's the chum, here's the literal loophole where all of you could start talking about how NASCAR has been racist. NASCAR's the one who uncovered the crime. They did everything right.
Yep, they volunteered the information. It doesn't change the fact that that thing was sitting there since 2019,
correct.
No one from NASCAR did anything about it.
But that's why it's a symbol that is funny in retrospect, if this stuff can be funny. Because first of all, let's just say hypothetically that it wasn't a noose at all, that it was just a garage pull, that it was just an accident that nobody ever meant to make it look like a noose. Man, that whole scene on Monday looks a little silly, like through that prism, like the idea of like we're all uniting on something that's not actually right. So.
Through
like,
that prism.
But let's say, and I don't want to parse the detail. I don't know. All right. I know there's a history of racism in that region. I know there's a history of racism in that sport. I know that there was enough circumstantial evidence there for a whole lot of people to jump to the wrong conclusion, even as NASCAR was doing the right thing.
And it also wasn't like Bubba Wallace didn't need a show of solidarity from his community in NASCAR, because he was the face of getting the Confederate flag being removed from its tracks.
I feel like Bubba Watson just went.
Wallace.
Bubba Wallace.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. I'm going to keep doing that. Jeez. I feel like Bubba Wallace is going to be a microcosm for basically everything that feels like the black experience lately, where it's like, hey, you guys are all with me. Whoa, this feels good, freeing. This is amazing. I've got the support of white people. Oh, no, it all crashed on my face. Now you're coming after me and saying I was the hoax and I'm responsible for this when I didn't do anything other than pull up into my garage.
NASCAR actually put him in a terrible spot.
Well, yeah, pretty awful. I mean, decades prior, leading up to that, and now, too. And again, let's not act like there wasn't a Confederate flag flying overhead that said defund NASCAR.
Oh, and all sorts of things going on that are going on every race that they have with, again, racists have claimed this sport. It doesn't mean that everyone in this sport is racist. It doesn't mean that the majority of people in and around this sport are racist. But
yeah, I'm glad you're saying that, because this was a message that was missing on Monday, Dan, from you directly.
Cool. Well, the thing that I want to go back and rewind on, and if it's possible, because Stu Gatz, I'm surprised you haven't already thought of this.
What's that?
Given that NASCAR handled everything right here, what's the last time NASCAR had a national moment? Go ahead. I'll give you the rest of time.
Well, probably
rest
Dale
of time.
Dale
I'll think
Jr.
Of something.
Dale Jr. winning at Daytona.
I feel like
what
Dale,
do you mean, considering what happened to
Mike,
his dad, that wasn't a national moment?
Not like
moment?
This. Ooh. I feel like Dale Sr. dying is
might
the,
be the moment.
That is the, I feel
I think
like
they go hand in hand, but okay.
Dale Sr.
You guys aren't gearheads like me, so it's fine.
That's right. We're not wearing Darrell Waltrip 17 Western Auto gear the way that you are today. I'm surprised that Stu Gatz hasn't come in with the take already of, like, if you're NASCAR, all of this, though, you know, it feels super uncomfortable, and you got the media talking about your racist past. All of this was a moment for NASCAR that NASCAR has not had. NASCAR has not had sports to itself in a really long time.
Not since Tony Stewart did that thing.
NASCAR has not had, yes, maybe Tony Stewart might be the last time where Tony Stewart was thought to have, run someone over on purpose. Yes, that's probably the last time. How many years ago was that? 5 years ago? 6 years ago? Yeah.
Longer than that, yeah, I think.
It feels like forever ago. You're right. This was NASCAR's biggest moment, and they stepped up, and they were trying to do change. Now, I've seen the asinine Twitter theory that this is all some sort of setup, and this is NASCAR creating a story. Why would they create the worst possible types of this story? There was no happy ending. It was just, man, this is bad for the sport. And now it's also bad for the sport. All that's good is the photo op that now feels different.
It's instructive. It really is instructive, Stugatz, on how difficult all of this stuff can be, even when you're doing the right things. Like, it's all of this. Like, if there's anything to sort of be taken from what it is that's happening around this story, which I will again repeat like I did on Monday, is a silly story in the context of what actual damaging racism has been. This is just a silly little symbolic threat that may have not been a threat, that wasn't a threat, that the FBI is saying is not a threat, or may have been a threat meant for someone else a while ago.
Or it could all just be a misunderstanding.
It could be all of that, and it doesn't matter either way. Even if it's a noose placed in his garage as a threat, it's small compared to the rest of what America should be talking about right now. And if it's not, it's small compared to the rest of what America should be talking about right now.
Tony Stewart was back in 2014, the number 20 car.
All right, so that was 6 years ago that NASCAR got its moment. The point being, though, all of this stuff is going to remain uncomfortable for everybody, because it's damn uncomfortable seeing some people taking a victory lap today over this. Like, this proves what exactly? That there's not racism?
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil, based on Sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W-30. That was 5W, I tried to say. Here's your SportsCenter update. The FBI has determined that Bubba Wallace was not the victim of a hate crime, and that the noose that is used as a pulley to close the garage door at his stall was there since as early as October. The Major League Baseball Players Association has agreed to the league's health and safety protocols and will start traveling to training camps to begin a 60-game season. Opening day will be held either July 23rd or the 24th. And finally, while 90% of movie theaters across the country will reopen by late July, a study conducted by one poll says 49% of Americans will avoid theaters altogether. It's the second highest industry on the study, behind public transportation and ahead of bars and restaurants, personal care establishments, and grocery stores. Soccer is back on ESPN Plus. Serie A, FA Cup, MLS, and more. Plus, get original series, exclusive studio shows, and the complete 30 for 30 library. Stream soccer from the best leagues and tournaments around the world, all in HD, all on your favorite devices. The beautiful game lives on ESPN Plus. Sign up today at ESPNplus.com or in the ESPN app. For all the latest headlines and information, tune to the SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Will Kane, right now, if you want some Bubba Wallace news and information and analysis from Will Kane, he has announced that this is his one last dance on First Take, his last ride on First Take.
Yeah, boy.
Excuse me. Last dance is a different thing, not to be confused either with The Undertaker's last ride.
I feel so bad for The Undertaker because he retired. Surprise, spoiler alert, on the final episode of The Last Ride, and nobody believes him.
Well, because he...
Because we've watched the entire series.
He's
Undertaker.
Earned that, Mike.
Yeah, you've earned that. You've retired several... The whole episode, all episodes 1 through 4 are you retiring and then unretiring. No one believes him.
That is correct. But Will Kane is not retiring. He is headed to other employment. And so if you want to hear what he has to say about the Bubba Wallace fiasco, have at it on First Take. Some of you continue to take a really odd victory lap around me and mainstream media people who continued to point out that NASCAR has a grave and awful history of racism. But for those taking a victory lap, I am willing to say the following. I know a lot of you are parsing the details on this, and I know we're taking sides on if it was a noose or wasn't a noose. Bubba Wallace is saying it's a noose. It looked like a noose. The FBI in its statement said it's a noose. But if you want to believe that it is only a garage pulley, I am willing to say the following to those of you who insist on a victory lap. It may not have been a noose this time.
I like the idea, the visual of you laying down, being the infield grass, and people just taking a victory lap around you.
Yes, like doing snow angels in the middle of the Talladega track.
Yes.
Also, journalistically, I have to bring you back. This seems to be a consistent theme here. The FBI didn't flatly say it was a noose. They said
it was fashioned into a noose.
It was a pull rope fashioned into a noose.
Yes, but Bubba Wallace is saying that NASCAR and the FBI say it's a straight-up noose. I'm not in that garage. I'm also not interested in particularly parsing those details. If you want to say you don't think it was a noose, have at it, that you don't think that this time it was a noose.
But here's what doesn't change, okay? NASCAR brought the information to Bubba Wallace, and Bubba Wallace was operating under the assumption that it was a noose.
I'm just trying to say what the FBI said, because we're on ESPN radio, and we have to say what the FBI
said. Mike, what the FBI said in a statement, and I've repeated the phrase several times now, is a garage pulley fashioned into a noose.
This is the first time you're saying that specific statement. I'm just trying to be fair, because you keep saying they're saying it's a noose, and that's loaded.
The FBI and NASCAR, this is what I didn't want to do. It's specifically the thing I did not want to do, which is get into a parsing of words when it's just irrelevant. All of it's irrelevant. It's not the conversation America's having today. It's something stinky that happened in the playpen. Like, we use sports all the time to do whatever it is that we want with what happened in sports. The details on this do not change NASCAR's decades of history on this subject.
No one is saying that. Mike is just pointing out things that needed to be pointed out. That's all. That's what Mike does.
And I think given our recent experience, we should make sure the facts are out there.
I wasn't misrepresenting the facts. What I didn't want to get to happen is to end up in the quicksand of this and this and this and this and this, and we still don't know what the hell happened with all of that information, all of it. We can sit here and parse 1,000 of the details and argue about all of them. We still don't know what the hell happened here. We don't know whether somebody in 2019 in October made it a noose purposely to do a racist thing, or whether it's just an accident and we can all laugh at this. But I can't laugh at it while parsing the stupidest of the details on this. I don't know if it's a noose. You don't know if it's a noose. The FBI says it was fashioned into a noose in its statement, but it may have just been a garage pulley. I don't know. Bubba Wallace seems to think it was a noose, and Bubba Wallace is doing the interview circuit saying that NASCAR and the FBI say it is a, quote, straight-up noose. I don't know what the truth is, but the fact is that as you listen to this and object to what it is that I'm saying, you don't either.
Yes. NASCAR is still investigating it, by the way, and whether it is a noose, whether it's not, I think it's kind of important to know if it's a noose that was left specifically for NASCAR's only black driver, and whether you want to believe the FBI and NASCAR, I understand people being suspicious. There's photographic evidence, according to an FBI investigation and an ongoing NASCAR investigation, that says this was left well before anybody knew NASCAR's only black driver would occupy that garage, which is important to say.
Stugatz here. Support for the Dan Le Batard Show with Stugatz podcast comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home today is so much more than it was yesterday, but at Rocket Mortgage, home is still all about you. During these challenging times, the top priority at Rocket Mortgage is the health and safety of the communities they serve. If you need mortgage assistance, their team is available 24/7 to answer questions and offer solutions. Whether that means saving money on your mortgage or finding a new way to navigate payments from their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Visit rocketmortgage.com/Lebatard to learn more. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org number is 3030.
We're all living in a time of high stress and anxiety. And while there are many ways people have found solace and maintained sanity during this time, going for brief walks, hikes, and runs outside, with the proper social distancing precautions, of course, has been a great outlet. So, if that's how you're choosing to get away from things for a bit, then Allbirds has something that might help. Introducing the Tree Dasher from Allbirds, the world's first performance running shoe made from premium natural materials that are engineered to perform. FSC-certified eucalyptus fiber uppers and ZQ-certified merino wool deliver superior comfort and flexibility. And the proprietary sugarcane-derived sweet foam soles have been reworked into a dual-density midsole optimized for cushioning, energy return, and stability. Allbirds also printed the Dasher's carbon footprint right on the shoe, so you know its impact on the planet. They've made the environment a stakeholder in their business. Because when the planet wins, we all win. With the new Allbirds Tree Dasher, feel confident knowing that you can run hard and tread light on the planet. Find your pair at allbirds.com today.
All guests on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Sarah Spain going to join us there in just a minute. Here's your SportsCenter update. The Knicks are hiring CAA's William Wesley, better known as Worldwide Wes, as Executive Vice President, Senior Advisor. I'll take it. I don't know what it means, but that guy's connected. I'm talking to Jason Kidd. Speaking of connections, Jason Kidd, Giannis.
What are you doing?
It's all happening. I'm doing it again.
You want? You think you're big plan to get Giannis as
yes,
a coach that
Jason Kidd
held him back until a new coach got there and made him an MVP?
I am hearing that Giannis and Jason Kidd remain very, very close, and he is the connector to perhaps getting Giannis to leave Milwaukee and go elsewhere.
I will say this for Jason Kidd. He protects his relationships quite well because I'm not really seeing it.
I'm not sure why he's in line for another job. His resume has a lot of bad on it.
Because he's a connector to Giannis. That's why.
Because he's not a connector to wins.
Yeah, but when you have Giannis, you get wins.
What do you remember from his coaching days? Spilling the soda on the court purposefully, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was his big move.
It was a big move.
That's actually one of the few times that I could point to him and
that
say,
good
coach.
Good coach.
I mean, can I have a moment, please? I mean, a moment.
Just you're always doing
Worldwide West.
You had that
Johnny
moment.
Walsh was your connector.
That
before.
Moment was the commercial break before when you thought you were getting Zion Williamson and then you ended up.
Don't even talk to me about that.
Bill Jackson was your connector before. Then getting Carmelo on your roster. Imagine all the people that are going to want to play with Carmelo.
You're leaving out DeAndre Jordan, who was supposed to be the connector to Kevin Durant. They connected in Brooklyn.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Do the Knicks lead the league in failed connectors?
Lakers guard Avery Bradley has opted out of playing in the NBA's Orlando, Florida restart of the season. And finally, if the petition to rename the city of Columbus, Ohio to Flavortown, Ohio, in dedication to Guy Fieri is successful, Bud Light will provide even more flavor for all of the renamed state capital with free Bud Light seltzer. The petition has garnered more than 6,000 signatures. Ridiculous. Tune in tonight for Time for Change. We won't be defeated. The one-hour special will examine black athletes' experiences with injustice and the unifying role that sports continues to play in bridging the divide between law enforcement and people of color in America. SportsCenter anchors L. Duncan, Michael Eaves, and Jay Harris will be joined by ESPN college sports reporter and NBA studio host Maria Taylor to host the show. Time for Change will feature a series of roundtable discussions with athletes and other leading voices in sports and culture. That's tonight, 8 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So Sarah loves baseball, and I want to ask Sarah about this conversation that we've been having. 42% of Major League Baseball players will be paid $100,000 or less by Major League Baseball for going into the pandemic. And Chris and Billy were mentioning during the break, what about the grocery store employee who's also going into the sickness and making $10 or $11 or $12 an hour. And good the point. Thing that I always, well, you say it's a good point, but the thing I always tell you is that in order to make a lot of money, you have to have a talent that's not easily disposable or replaced by other people. Like, you got to be better at your job. Mm-hmm. You get stuck in bad jobs very often because you don't have the skills to get out and be a Major League Baseball player. So, Sarah, you hear that Major League Baseball players, 42% of them, are going to be making $100,000 or less this year and think what? Okay, very good.
Wow.
And she's disgusted with it.
Not happy. Who knew?
The sound,
taking it really hard.
The sound was comedically perfect because it wasn't quite a landline, but it was also very clearly a line dropping at a comedically perfect time.
Yes.
So I don't know if she heard the question or not.
I mean, that was like,
I have no idea what's happening. I don't know. My phone is being annoying. I'm sorry, guys. I think exactly what I've thought the entire time during this, which is people keep siding with billionaire owners because they aren't jealous that they're playing a game and they don't know who they are and what they look like and what their salaries are. So, you know, people keep forgetting that not only are these baseball players the ones that have to put their future contracts at risk and their families and their lives and their health, but also that they're not getting 100% of their salaries. In the end, they're going to get like 37%. And we can all recognize that going to do our job for 37% of what we were going to be paid for a year is tough to wrap your head around. It's just that most people don't, once they've decided that baseball players are not an, you know, empathetic group, then they can't be convinced off that.
But Sarah, I think what people are looking at is baseball players had opportunities to take better deals and they turned them down and the commissioner forced the season upon them. So, I mean, they had opportunities to make more money. They said no, and that
better
comes off as pretty
whom,
selfish.
Though?
Well, better deals across the board in terms of per player making more money.
Right. No, not well, not necessarily, though. In the end, the total amount of money that Major League Baseball was willing to spend was roughly the same. It was just more games for a little bit more money.
Mm-hmm.
$1.5 billion was the same amount in the last two proposals. The games just changed.
Right.
So baseball was doing the entire time.
All right, I'm beginning to think this isn't going to work out for us.
All right, that's what she said is the podcast, if you want to check it out.
What is it that she said?
I don't know. If you want to find out what she said, that's what she said is the name of the podcast. Two failures and you're out. We can't have you out here anymore.
60-game season, look at that.
We can't keep doing that. I can't believe that we've gone this long without talking about Ben Roethlisberger saying at a Man Up Pittsburgh event that he had a porn and alcohol addiction.
I was able to speak with Sarah as I said goodbye to her. She's like, my point is, Bomani's right.
That's it?
Yeah.
I'm good with that being like a governor of most things.
I might go there every time. I mean,
did you guys see what happened here when you talk about some of the institutional pressure that falls on somebody? Did you guys see what a former safety for the Bengals, George Iloka, said about being on the Bengals and what was happening with the owner of the team? Because Sarah just mentioned something here about owners being faceless. And while I know the name of the Bengals owner, I do not know what he looks like. If he walked in here right now, I wouldn't know what that human being looks like. And so anyways, one of the pressures that was happening here, to me it was interesting when put from this perspective, okay? George Iloka was wanting to kneel. And he says, quote, I always said I was not going to talk about that until I was done playing officially, but I really don't care. A lot of people, myself in particular, wanted to kneel. It was a big issue, and that was weighing heavily on my heart. It was weighing heavy on my mind, and obviously it was weighing heavy on a lot of people's hearts and minds across the NFL and across the nation, particularly with African Americans. It wasn't just me that felt some kind of way about that. And then there was a player meeting, and the Bengals were split on what to do. And he felt like he didn't have the support of his white teammates. The meeting left pretty much just like the African-American players feeling like we want to kneel. And then it was the white players telling us, you guys don't need to do that. It's almost like saying, go be oppressed somewhere else and keep it out of my sight, that sort of thing. So, you know, it was like, I understand that you don't get how we feel, and we're not asking you to join us, but just stop telling us not to. Like, okay, you're not going to do this with us. That stinks. That hurts. You're my teammates. We're fighting bodies next to each other. You're not going to do this with us. Okay. But now you're going to tell me I can't do it? I shouldn't do it? So the pressure is going to come from the owner and all my white teammates? And so you're going to tell me, and the commissioner and the league, and you're going to tell me, okay, I got to be out here on my own with this? And we were talking about disposable Publix employees. That sport can become awfully disposable if you don't fall in line like that. No matter how good you are, that sport can become something where you are disposable, as we saw with Kaepernick, no matter whether you're good or not or whether you play an important position.
You think those players would be willing to do it now?
I mean, it's much easier now.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
But it's all much easier now. Everything has shifted on this. You just heard we're doing tonight a 1 hour, you know, round table hosted by our black talent talking about change in America. Like, what, you're not noticing that? Like, that just got here. Like, that wasn't here 6 months ago. That's here because you have in this organization, black people finally feel free to, hey, let's go. Stop pressure. Stop with the institutional pressure of, I gotta be out here by myself on this stuff. Like, thanks for the white support. The reason Bomani was hopeful when this started is because he's like, holy bleep, that's a lot of white people behind us. Because that's how it has to be. Otherwise, you get what you got in the Bengals locker room, where the money is lined up against you. The white players are lined up against you. And it feels like you're out there alone on an island.
Bomani's right. Guest on the Dan Le Batard Show, appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Tim Kirchick is going to join us there. Here's your SportsCenter update. The Knicks are hiring CAA's William Wesley, better known as Worldwide Wes, as Executive Vice President, Senior Advisor. Lakers guard Avery Bradley has opted out of playing in the NBA's Orlando, Florida restart of the season. Finally, Jurassic Park is currently the number one movie at the box office 27 years after the original release. Heck of a run. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Our friend Tim Kirchin is with us now, and if you have any baseball questions, we might get to him at 786-456-4833. 37. What are the interesting things about the agreement and the fact that baseball, to you, Tim, and thanks for making time for us, that baseball is now coming back?
Well, I'm just thrilled, Dan, that we have at least a roadmap. You really can't figure out how this is going to work until you know when it's going to start and when it's going to end. So barring any sort of change here, and it could happen with COVID, you know, they'll spring training July 1st and the games 23rd of the 24th and end September 30th and the World Series ends October 31st. Once you have those in place, then you can do a few things. What interests me a little bit, I'm still not positive why the players didn't accept the proposal and then took the 60 games. I think, or implemented the 60 games. I think they're just trying to set it up to file a grievance, but from what I'm told, there's no guarantee they're going to win a grievance, and those grievances take, you know, years sometimes to be heard. So I'm still a little confused why they just didn't agree. I think it would have helped the morale for everyone to say, hey, we agreed on something. Instead, it was a season that will now be imposed instead of agreed upon.
Timmy, any rules in the 60-game season, the proposal, that bother you?
Well, I'm really old, Stugatz. I'm 63, so I'm not in favor of putting a runner at second base to start the 10th inning. I totally understand how people say, look, 18-inning games don't do anyone any good, and I understand that. But some of the most enjoyable games you'll ever see are when Darwin Barney gets off a home run in the 19th inning of a game, and he's an infielder. But I'm just hoping this doesn't gain momentum and that people really like this idea for 60 games. And then starting next season, we're going to have a runner on second to start the 10th inning every game. That's something that would offend me as a 63-year-old who's covered baseball for as long as I have.
If that offends you, I imagine Billy Billy is back out here saying that there needs to be, this is the perfect time to showcase a Stugatz idea. Billy, do you want to tell Tim Kirkchen about the Stugatz idea? Let's see how this one goes over.
Oh, Dan, Timmy's well aware of the magic at bat, and I think that he knows this would be the absolute perfect season for us to unleash the magic at bat and the trampoline warning tracks and the ponds in the outfield, because it's kind of like an experimental season. We're going to see what works, what doesn't work, and then you know what? Next year, if the magic at bat works, we'll implement it.
Explain the magic at bat to him without assuming that Tim Kirkchen knows what the magic at bat is.
And the audience, let it be stated.
Jesus Christ, Billy.
Let it be stated, though. Timmy, I will explain the magic at bat. I think one time per game, a manager should be able, like, let's say Mike Trout comes up in the eighth, that, and, you know, they're trailing by a couple of runs. And Trout, even batting out of order, the manager one time per game can use his magic at bat. So even though Trout batted in the eighth, the manager can still trot him out there in the ninth inning. And I will tell you this. Dave Roberts, Dodgers manager, was presented with my idea to me, and he loved it.
Yeah, he was being polite. Just like what you guys told me that Jim Leland thought it was a great idea to have a trampoline.
Jim Leland,
what are you kidding me? No, all of these are really bad ideas. Seriously, I always thought one, and I'm in the minority on this, I always thought one of the coolest things about baseball is the star player doesn't take the last shot of every game, like Michael and LeBron and Larry and those guys. It means all 25 guys actually have a chance to be the hero of the game tonight. If with the magic at bat, Trout could be the hero all the time, but they could just walk him anyway, which you can't really do in the NBA unless you're going to foul a guy on purpose. And if he's Larry Bird, he's making them both anyway. So I think it's a really bad idea, but I agree with you. Now's the time to try stuff. That's just way beyond things.
See? So Tim agreed with me, Dan. It's a good idea. And you can't disagree with this either, Tim. This is clearly going to be a made-for-TV situation, right? Because there's not going to be any fans in the stands. So what Stugatz didn't tell you about the magic at bat is that you don't know that it's going to be Mike Trout. You can assume it, but you have to see who comes through the plume of smoke, because he didn't tell you about the plume of smoke
exactly
that gets thrown by the manager, and then someone comes out.
And imagine the criticism if they didn't use it with Mike Trout.
The plume of smoke.
Oh, no, but I mean, Timmy, the plume of smoke is the whole thing. I
mean, it feels like we're saying the same thing here, Timmy.
Yep. So you agree.
Yes,
right?
When he says the plume of smoke incredulously, and Tim Kirkchen sounds like he wants to fight you, yes, that is him agreeing with you. Do you believe, Tim Kirkchen, that Matt Patricia looks like the guy in a competitive eating challenge who hits the wall, wipes the sweat from his brow, turns his cap backwards, pumps up the crowd watching before he takes an aggressive bite out of the quadruple bypass bacon cheeseburger?
Isn't he a pirate in a fish restaurant?
He is also a pirate in a fish restaurant. Yes, is. Is Dana Holgorsen, does he look like the creepy gas attendant in the 80s slasher flick warning a group of teenagers not to go to the campsite in the woods? I like this one. Ready, Stugatz? Does Manu Ginobili look like the violinist at an expensive restaurant at a table where he is undesired? And when you give him a look like take a hike, he wiggles his eyebrows vigorously like, yeah, I know I'm good. Does Mike Leach look like a Renaissance fair vendor who asks you, would you like some mead? Then, realizing that his supervisor is watching, sighs loudly, rolls his eyes, and says, would thou like some mead?
Save that one.
Save that one.
Frame it.
Does Pete Carroll look like the father-in-law who you like more than your wife and your kids? Oh, a snort, a magical snort right there. Thank you for the magical snort.
Timmy, pressing question of the day. Do they make them like Tony Gwynn anymore?
No, Tony Gwynn was a magician. He, 94 season, he used one bat like the entire year, just held it out against certain tough lefties like Jeff Passero who might get in on him. He was absolutely great. And years ago, an American League team hired a rocket scientist to do a study on exit velocity. And among the findings was Tony Gwynn wasn't a great hitter. He was a lucky hitter because his exit velocity wasn't up there with the best hitters of the time. Little did that guy know that the magician Tony Gwynn could hit a hard ground ball between short and third almost any time he wanted. So, yes, I think he's underrated in baseball history because he could run. He stole over 50 bases in a season, multiple gold gloves, and the tiniest hands I've ever seen on a great player. Tiny. Mine are twice as big as Tony Gwynn's hands.
What?
Shocking.
What?
Tony Gwynn was a four-year star at San Diego State basketball, and he told me he had zero chance of ever palming a basketball. That's how little his hands were. And because he had those tiny hands, that's why he used the smallest bat I've ever seen on a major league. It was like 32.5 inches, 30.5 ounces. It was tiny, but he loved the control of the bat, but he needed a tiny bat because his hands were so small.
Man, Mike was right. They don't make them like Tony Gwynn anymore.
That's totally right. The total opposite of Julio Franco's bat. Thank you for being on with us, Tim. We appreciate you being on with us.
Hubie Brown.
Stugatz here. Support for the Dan Le Batard Show, Win Stugatz podcast, comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home today is so much more than it was yesterday, but at Rocket Mortgage, home is still all about you. During these challenging times, the top priority at Rocket Mortgage is the health and safety of the communities they serve. If you need mortgage assistance, their team is available 24/7 to answer questions and offer solutions. Whether that means saving money on your mortgage or finding a new way to navigate payments from their home to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. Visit rocketmortgage.com/Lebatard to learn more. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number is 3030.
Guest on the Dan Le Batard Show appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Here's your Sports Center update. Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka have both withdrawn from the Travelers Championship after being informed that their caddies have tested positive for the coronavirus.
Golf can't even keep it out.
Let's play basketball, baseball, football.
There seems to be more to this, too. Now there's chatter on Twitter as to whether or not this tournament even happens.
No. A lot of bets.
I'm on DeChambeau.
I've Koepka in my DraftKings.
We can agree, right, that the most responsible thing to do and the thing that would be done if money wasn't involved is we wouldn't be playing any sports, right?
Certainly not in this country.
Yeah, we can agree.
Yeah.
We should all still be inside. I mean,
yeah, we haven't earned it if this is a merit thing. Mm-hmm. This country hasn't earned
it. We have not earned our freedom as a country to go outside freely because we've handled this virus very poorly.
We haven't earned sports. I mean,
just be clear on what it is that we're headed toward, okay? There are a whole lot of people here who are making decisions to get sports back because money and money and money and money and money and money, and that's the reason.
The Yankees and Dodgers are co-favorites at 7-2 to win the World Series at Caesars Sportsbook. The Astros are next at 11-1, followed by the Braves and the Twins, who are each 15-1 at Caesars, the Twinkies.
Got some breaking news on the PGA front. Brian Wacker of Golf Digest, which is a great name to cover golf, it says PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan will address the media today at 2 p.m. Eastern. That's not sounding good.
Oh, boy. And finally, the first all-electronic television was invented by Philo Farnsworth. He came up with the idea at the age of 14. These days, it's good to be prepared, and that includes your vehicle. That's why Advance Auto Parts has free vehicle battery testing and installation with no appointment necessary, and also curbside pickup on any order. Advance your auto at Advance Auto Parts and participating CarQuest locations. See stores for details. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
Mike has been talking for a week about how he had a bit of a handyman mishap. We will get to that in a second. But this guy writes in, Stugatz, and we've had some numbers recently on what's happening with social media and just the sheer number of bots out there and the sheer number of things that are meant to sow divisions. And they make their way to sports, which is why it is that I read you this from Jeff Waugh, 7598-3647. I don't side with owners because I'm jealous of players. I side with owners because I live in the real world. Like most, I work in an at-will employment state. My company can fire me at any time. No guaranteed contract. I'm down to 80% pay during COVID. Instead of whining and demanding, I'm thankful I have a job. My private company owner is a billionaire, but it would be ludicrous of me to expect her to pay me to not perform. It is a free market business. Now, is this someone who's afraid of losing his job or her job?
Whatever they're saying sounds a bot right.
Give yourself the laugh, man. You deserve it.
I was trying to say of this Bubba Wallace controversy earlier, but now people have beaten me to the joke all over the internet. No noose is good noose.
Wow. That wasn't for you. It's for everyone else who's been making it.
Yeah. With equally bad comedic timing.
So, Mike, what happened with you and your handyman situation?
So I'm trying to pick up some skills during the pandemic. I'm getting more and more confident because I repaired not one but two toilets through trial and error in my home, and I'm feeling good. I've long since needed a door in my home replaced, so I took it off the hinges, which was a Herculean effort, walked it down the stairs, have it in the garage. Now, I don't have a pickup truck. I don't really have a truck that I can put this garage door in, and that means I can't go to Home Depot and just pick up another garage door. So I did some laser measurements with an app on my phone for the door, and I went to a hardware store online, and I ordered a door the same size, and I had it delivered. Because of the pandemic, the delivery takes a month and a half, and I totally forgot about it. Then, a month and a half later, this huge door shows up at my doorstep in a huge wooden crate. I need like a crowbar or fashion a crowbar-like device to get this whole thing open. It is, I mean, so hard to get this thing out. I'm spending an hour and a half on it, sweating everywhere. I also, again, guy without a pickup truck, can't just drive all this excess wood to the dump. So I'm breaking down all the wood chunks so it can fit in my garbage. And I'm doing all of this in the hot sun because it's a huge mess that I'm leaving outside. Comes a time for me to actually take the door upstairs and do the easy part, which is just get the hinges and screw them in. I got that part because I undid it. I can figure out how to do the rest. Go upstairs, get the door on the hinges. Guess whose door is 4 inches too small?
Yeah.
Oh. Tough break.
What happened?
I measured it wrong.
There's an app that measures get a ruler.
What happened to a tape measure?
I had a tape measure set aside, and I misplaced it. I was looking for it. The inspiration hit me. You know what? I'm a handyman. I'm finally going to fix this door. Then I spent 30 minutes looking for a tape measure.
Brutal.
Couldn't find it, so I just did it on my phone. Sure enough, I obviously found the tape measure shortly thereafter. But, yeah, did all the work, got it in there, and was like, oh, no, I closed the door. Or you'd think I'd be able to tell before I did all this. So then I lugged the door back downstairs, dripping sweat. And now I got two doors in my garage that I got to get rid of. Do I go to Home Depot? Oh, I just said the place. Do I go to Home Depot? I'm like, hey, I have to return this. And they're going to ask me why. I'm like, I'm an idiot. I got the wrong size door.
Put these things on the poll here at Le Batard Show. Have you become more of a handyman during the pandemic? Should there ever be a time, this is another question, should there ever be a time where an app replaces the tape measure, the good old-fashioned tape measure?
I told Mike to use a ruler.
And this is Chris's question based off of maybe that question where Stugatz is saying use a ruler. Is this easily the least handy show in the history of all broadcast forms? Because Chris was asking the question earlier today. Roy is getting furious at everybody because Roy can actually fix things.
I got all the hard part down, Roy. It was the measuring that I got wrong.
I mean, the rack on the back of my golf cart broke, and I took a stab at it. And I am telling you, those washers are difficult to put on at the same time as you try to screw something in. I had to send it back to the store. I mean, hopefully it'll be back today.
There's a reason why people say measure twice, cut once. For your situation.
Yeah, but
you measure twice, buddy.
Yeah, but this is not a phrase that this particular show outside of you
I'm
is
just hearing that for the first time. It sounds like a good adage. I'll make sure to remember. I live my life by one fundamental principle, which is righty tighty, lefty loosey, and this is going there. Measure twice. That's a good one.
If something involves an Allen wrench, I'm good. But if you get outside of an Allen wrench, if I need a level for something, if I have to drill something, like, get out of here with that. Dan, if you were building a fence, a wooden fence outside, who on this show are you calling to help you?
That is a great question, because normally I'd go to Mike, but
he's calling me to find him a landscaper that I can help him with this.
No, he'd call you to ask who amongst us is the best at doing this.
Oh, I need to fix a fence? Mike, get me someone who can fix a fence.
I think I'd go, it's either Roy or Tony. I mean,
what are you doing with Tony, though? Why do you think that Tony is good at fixing stuff? Who the hell is Tony? Why do you think that Tony is good at fixing stuff?
I don't know Tony as well as I know the other guys, obviously.
You're basing that on knowing the other guys well, not on knowing him well. You're basing that on how poor everyone else is doing any of this.
You're right. You are right. I'm not calling Billy. I'm not calling Chris. I feel like Tony is pretty good with a screwdriver.
I feel like Billy might be a sneaky play here because you know you're going to be safe if you ask Billy. He's going to make sure that you don't do anything too reckless. I might go Billy, actually.
I would go with myself and Billy. Billy has some experience in doing stuff like that.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday on the local hour. I actually built a gate, and I had to use a jackhammer and do all this stuff. But thanks for listening and supporting, Stugatz.
So, Stu, I am really good with the screwdriver, but I'm not also good with a lot of other things. We've bought a couple things during the quarantine that I have to put up on the wall with a screw and like another little thing. And they're still sitting on the floor because I haven't done them.
Wow. My Twitter mentions are littered with measure twice, cut once. This is apparently a saying.
this show, the last time I tried to fix a hose is the last time I tried to fix something. It was in about 1985. And if we had the video of me trying to do that, what you would have seen, I'm not making this up because I remember thinking to myself, God, this should be something that should be on television. People should be able to enjoy what just happened to me here. Because I got so frustrated with the hose that I threw it down on the ground. And when I threw it down on the ground, it sprayed right back up into my face. And I was like swatting at my face right and left because the water had gotten me in the face. And I ran head first right into like a lantern light that was on the side of my house. Just so it made a metal echoing sound that went throughout the neighborhood of me throwing this down, water in the face, yelling and cursing, and then running into a like light that was on the side of my house.
Your dad's an engineer.
Capital One knows life doesn't alert you about your credit card. That's why we created Eno, the Capital One assistant that looks out for surprise credit card charges like overtipping, duplicate charges, or potential fraud, then sends an alert to your phone and helps if you need to fix them. Another way Capital One is watching out for your money when you're not. Capital One, what's in your wallet? See CapitalOne.com for details.
Here's your SportsCenter update. Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka have both withdrawn from the Travelers Championship after being informed that their caddies have tested positive for the coronavirus. The Yankees and Dodgers are co-favorites at 7-2 to win the World Series at Caesars Sportsbook. The Astros are next at 11-1, followed by the Braves and Twins, who are each 15-1 at Caesars. And finally, the sentence I never said she stole my money can have seven different meanings depending on which word is emphasized when speaking it aloud. Tune in tonight for Time for Change. We won't be defeated. The one-hour special will examine black athletes' experiences with injustice and the unifying role that sports continues to play in bridging the divide between law enforcement and people of color in America. SportsCenter anchors Al Duncan, Michael Eaves, and Jay Harris will be joined by ESPN college sports reporter and NBA studio host Maria Taylor to host the show. Time for Change will feature a series of roundtable discussions with athletes and other leading voices in sports and culture. That's tonight, 8 Eastern, on ESPN. For all the latest headlines and information, tune in to SportsCenter on ESPN Radio all throughout the day.
So our old friend Henry Abbott from True Hoop, it's been a long time since we talked to him. He had a story that was enlightening. I was not familiar with the details in his story. Henry, thank you. It's good talking to you. Thank you for returning to the show here. You want to tell the people basically the why of why you wrote this story and how you found out about this story and what went into this story?
Yeah, Dan, it's good to be here. So, a guy in the NBA said to me he thought it was weird that the NBA had approved an owner from a fourth-generation mob family, and he was referring to the Rockets owner, Tillman Fertitta. And it seemed like this kind of breathless secret that you'd never get reported or you'd have to go talk to FBI agents and this kind of stuff. But instead, I'm slightly simplifying, but the process involved a lot of newspapers.com and basically Google, and it's people from Houston or Galveston, where the family is really from, are not surprised at all. It's a totally open secret that the Fertitta family goes way back in this Galveston mob. I'm not saying this at a tremendous amount of risk. It's been established by indictments and even like spreads into the movie Casino. That's sort of the story of at least one member of this family. And we somehow in sports just were ignorant to the whole thing.
What do you mean the movie Casino?
So, do you remember the movie Casino?
Yes, it's great.
So it's about the skim, right? The mob, the Kansas City mob and Chicago mob, they like get a guy on the inside in the casino, basically before the money's counted, the money is skimmed off and it goes to, someone has to drive it to I think it's the Kansas City, just hand the money out to the mob. And it seems all fictionalized, but it's really based on this true story. The Argent Corporation employed various characters who have been, you know, somewhat fictionalized in the movie. But one of the key figures is this guy, Carl Thomas, who was heard on wiretaps, like teaching the mob how to skim money. There are a lot of other characters in this story, but his partner in owning a different casino in Vegas was Frank Fertitta Jr., and a relative of Tillman's. But and Frank Fertitta never did actually, like, everybody got in trouble in that one. That guy Carl ratted on everybody except Frank, which was kind of amazing. And Frank was not, he's like the only person involved who wasn't like permanently banned from Vegas. But one of the people who heard the wiretap said, like, look, you know, I know what this guy did. Here's a quote from the guy. The outlier vote, retired Deputy Police Chief Jerry Cunningham, he told the Des Moines Register in 92, I listened to the recordings and read the transcripts of the trial. I knew who and what Carl Thomas was. Carl Thomas admits he stole money for the mob and gave it to superiors. Frank Fertitta Jr. was a member of the Carl Thomas crew.
So how strong are the ties? Like how many ways can you tie the roots of this to present ownership?
I mean, nobody said that Tillman Fertitta is like an active member of the mob. What's weird to me is that, you know, how will we ever know where this family money comes from, right? And he is, by some measures, the most successful restaurateur in the world. Does this sound normal to you that you would own a bunch of steakhouses and then purchase the Houston Rockets for $2.2 billion? So you're hungry for Tillman to repudiate this family history, which you just don't see. It's not out of the question that Tillman, who's overtly a very successful businessman, just earned this money, and I'm not suggesting he didn't, but I'm saying that it is weird that he became an NBA owner, that he, like,
won the lottery who gets to buy an NBA team in a very competitive time. One of the reports said that he didn't even have the highest bid. That's a little strange. It's even stranger that nobody said anything. It's weird that me on newspapers.com is how we in sports media learn about this, because it seems, you know, potentially relevant. And frankly, some of the people in this background fixed matches. Right? So this is the time that the NBA is getting into legalized gambling and stuff. It just seems like, okay, well, are we good here? Everybody, did we check this out? Did we vet this well enough?
Henry, so how and why did the NBA allow him to become an NBA owner?
I don't know. That's a black box. That's another problem, right? It's like, we should know more about the profit, right? I always think about Adnan Khashoggi was like the world's most famous arms dealer. He tried to buy the Utah Jazz. He almost made it. He was almost approved. The finance committee shut him down. So, like, why would Adnan Khashoggi want the Utah Jazz? And my guess is that if you own the Utah Jazz, the media stops referring to you as arms trader. I'm not sure you start referring to as Utah Jazz owner, right? Like,
did you reach out to Fertitta himself? What has he said about this? Has he been questioned about this publicly very much?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're so behind. Texas Monthly Magazine has written, you know, 6, 7, 8 big features about all of this. It comes, they just do it every decade. They just do it again. And it's rich every time, and they get access to him every time. And basically, there's actually the best quote is from his dad, who's like, look, Tillman likes to have control of everything. This thing that drives him nuts, because it's the one thing he can't control. Like, it's the family history. Like, it just drives him nuts that his reputation is smeared by this past. And, you know, the implication is that he has nothing to do with it. But I couldn't find the quote where he's like, oh, that was terrible that they were involved in all this prostitution and murder and, you know, blah, 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 paying off authorities. But you just can't, I don't see that quote. He's said a ton of stuff. In the TV show, probably know he said it, but, like, I couldn't find it.
So what is the closest Fertitta name mafioso that we have to the owner of the Rockets? Like, where? How? What's the closest you could bring this to his doorstep?
Oh, is that the question that's most designed to get me sued?
Well, but you wrote a story that you had a story that had all sorts of interesting facts in it. It was very thorough. Careful. In terms of things that have been reported long before you arrived at this doorstep.
I'd be happy just getting sued, Henry. Be careful.
Yeah, if it were just sued, you're absolutely. Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is Henry Abbott getting off light if he merely gets sued by the NBA owner with mafia ties?
Come on, I just Great Magazine. There's lots of awards. That's all I did. It's kind of a data dump of, like, all of this past. Right, the part that's incontrovertible, we can't argue, happened, you know, in the first half of last century, on into a little bit in Vegas, the 60s and 70s and 80s. After that, you know, I didn't really study. There is this other branch of his family that has this whole that about the UFC. They are also Fertitta's. Everybody's been in lawsuits, right? Everybody's been accusing of this malfeasance or whatever, and the investors got ripped off, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. You know, you never know who to believe in those kind of things. I really don't know that I have any kind of message about, you know, Tillman's in some way crooked. What I'm saying is, holy crap, this family, right? He's 100% from this family, which 100% was in the mob, and they 100% now, one of them owns an NBA team. Even though he didn't have the money to buy the NBA team, he had to borrow, he had to finance practically all of it. I think he had about $300 million of his own money for a $2.2 billion purchase, and now it's showing all the signs of being short of cash. It's like exactly not the kind of owner the NBA wants. It just raises questions.
Yes, it does. Like, yes, it does.
I told you.
We can't answer many of them, but it does raise questions. Thank you, Henry. Thank you for being on with us.
This is the first time you hang up on me in like a decade.
Thank you. We appreciate
it. Great story.
It was good. It was good catching up with you.
Good day, guys. Thank you.
Paid that man his money.
If you're wondering why Stugatz just shouted, I told you, into a microphone, it's because he repeats anything said into his ears. DraftKings, people.
I told you.
DraftKings. It's just amazing. One day you're going to repeat the wrong thing.
I am. Perhaps I should put the phone down, not text, not worry about DraftKings, and maybe listen.
Several months ago, I alluded to, hey, Fertitta, you may want to look into that. And as Henry Abbott saying, "No, Fertitta's a little cash poor compared to the other owners," I whisper, "Told you." And Sugats thinks I'm feeding him a lie.
Yes. Oh, no, I thought we told Henry Abbott that a few months ago as well. Oh, I mean, didn't we? That's the way I remember.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.